Brevin Knight came up in an era of highly dynamic, creative, and explosive point guards out of New York. For a kid from New Jersey that ended up at Stanford, Brevin used his high IQ, ability to see angles, and anticipation to make it despite his lack of size. In 12 NBA seasons, BK established himself as a player who could both run an offense, wreak havoc on defense, and lead a team. Now he's the voice of the Memphis Grizzlies and has a front row seat to Ja Morant's show-stopping abilities and this new era of point guards. As Brevin tells Penny, point guard play is at an all-time high and there is a lot to like when studying the game right now. And if you're studying the game right now as an undersized guard, listen to Brevin break it down. It's the 2 Cents Podcast. We're off and running. Remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast to catch every episode as soon as they drop.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the My 2 Cents Podcast. I have a special guest, a guy that I've been knowing forever. You know him as well, especially if you're in Memphis right now. He's with the Grizzlies talking every night about Ja Morant and the boys. Mr. Brevin Knight. Brevin, thank you so much for joining us, my man.
Come on, Penny, anytime. You know, as you say, it's been a long time. Y'all ushered me in here nicely when I came here to Memphis to play, and I feel like I am one of the city's own, and a lot because you guys stamped it. So I appreciate it.
Well, because you just played the game the right way, man. Just ever since I've known you. When I saw you on the bus at Stanford, I think we were in Sacramento or somewhere. We crossed each other's paths, yep. Whatever. Wherever we were, I was just amazed at just your toughness, your poise, and how you played the game. So everywhere you played, you've been a favorite. But coming here, that's what we're about. You're about that grit and grind, high IQ. Understand the game, how to get people involved, and then knowing when to get your pockets when you did things. So that's what I appreciated the most about your game. So the city did too.
Well, that's why I'm still here. I looked around and I said, shoot, I've been living here longer than I was living in Jersey.
That's crazy.
This is my 18th year of living, the 18th, 19th year of living in Memphis.
Yeah, no, we definitely appreciate that because you're great people. And talking about Jersey, let's talk about Livingston, Jersey. Talk about Jersey, growing up in Jersey, and then going from Jersey to Stanford.
Well, the biggest thing I always tell people, and one, I grew up in East Orange, New Jersey. And people say, whenever people see that Livingston, when I was younger, I was very literal. So if you said your birthplace, like where were you born? I was like, oh, I was born in the hospital in Livingston. I didn't. So since then, it has followed me for so long. For us in East Orange, it was playing in the parks. And I think that's what gave me that grit. That's what gave me that want, was wanting to play on the for real court. We had 3 courts in my city, well, in our park. And it was kind of a play around court. And then we had back to back courts, which was most like your middle school, high school, and then the big court was all the people that played all around the city. Those were grown men. Yeah. So the goal was to get on the grown man court, and then once you got there, then anywhere else I played, there was never any challenge that was bigger than what I had to be challenged with playing in the park. And yeah. So when we would play big games or people would play again, I'm like, shoot, I've been playing big games. For games that was big games because it was big money for the people sitting on the side watching because it was the gambling on the games.
Yep.
It was big time for who I was playing against. So a lot of these big moments for other people, I'm like, shoot, I've been playing in life or death moments.
Come on, man. They talk about pressure. That's pressure on that court, making the right decision. Now, if your team loses and you're the reason why, it could be some problems.
Bro, it's going to be some problems. So the pressure was nothing. And you know, and then to get the opportunity to go to Stanford, one in which it was different because they really weren't looking for me. It all just kind of fell into place. And then once I got there, it was culture shock because I tell everybody, I came from a city that was 99% black. Now, even though I went to school that was predominantly white schools from the 6th grade, I always went home to the same environment.
Yeah.
Once I went to Stanford, it was all the time environment, and so that adjustment was a lot bigger than I realized until after the fact. But right. You kind of insulate yourself with people who look like you, move like you, and I think because of it, I missed out on a lot of the other aspects of what college should have been, people that you should have been meeting. But I don't. Other than that, I can't complain about what it afforded me. from there.
Yeah, and let's talk about, and that's great, and let's talk about the 4 years. Like, that's unheard of nowadays in this NIL era. Just actually staying where your feet are planted. I'm sure you had an opportunity to be like, I can get to the league. What made you want to stay?
It was still even though the getting to the league really was never a part of the equation for me.
Okay.
The equation for me was, I always told people, I use basketball to further where I can be in life. Mm. It was, and that being in life, the dream was always if you can be a pro. But that was a dream. The goal was to go to college, make good connections, and be able to get a good job, and then just live life. You know, you find your wife, have kids, and that would be it. And that was always the goal. And then I got to Stanford. We played against Cal and Jason Kidd, and he was like, we got done playing. He was like, man, you know, you could be a pro one day. And I was like, oh, like an NBA pro? He was like, yeah. And I think from that moment until my senior year, everything I did, there's another reason why I didn't have as many relationships and friendships at Stanford. Everything I did was predicated on graduating early and going to the league. Mm. And that's what I did. I changed my shot. I was in the gym working out. I came home my freshman summer. And then after that, I never came home again. I just stayed at school, went to summer school, and played in San Francisco, worked out at school. And so that took it from being a dream to being a goal. And now how do I attain this goal the same way as I was able to get all of the other goals that I want? And it was just, you just went in and put in the work, put my head down, and I was just like, shoot, every opportunity I get to play against somebody with a name or somebody who was perceived to be better, I wanted that opportunity.
Yeah. And here's the weird thing, because you took a major pivot. You went to school for relationships and, like you said, an education from Stanford. A degree on the wall from Stanford means a ton. So you understood that mission. But then Jason Kidd said to you, when you're out there competing, that East Orange comes out like, this Jason Kidd, okay, and what?
Yes.
You know, and he saw that in you and was like, yo, bro, you got it. And then he was like, you know what? Maybe I'm going to pivot a little bit now and say, if I could do that, I think I want to do that now. That says a lot about you, though.
Well, I think I give my mom and dad, man, so much credit. And because it was, you know, they always said opportunity. You say opportunity is just luck meeting preparation. Mm-hmm. And so being always going to be undersized. So my dad was always like, listen, whenever you get chances, you get opportunity, you don't get a second chance. Like there isn't but look at his size. Look at his athleticism. Look, he could still be this. It's just, look at his size. He ain't going to be good enough. And so it was the same mentality I took with school. It was, you only one of that's in this school. I felt like my representation was for all young black men while I was in these predominantly white schools. The way y'all going to look at me, you're not going to just look at me and say, oh, that's the basketball player on our team. It's like, nah, I'm also be the best student in class. Mm. And so that was, when I went to Stanford, it was the same mentality was, if I'm going to be able to be a pro, then I'm going to have to do something with this school, which was I'm going to have to go to summer school so that I can start to get myself ahead. So when I'm in school, I'm not having to try to kill myself the same way. Yeah. And so it was, everything was goal oriented. And it was just about you putting in the work and you got the chance, then you better make the most of it.
Yeah. Just, you know, being a teammate of yours, you played every possession like you knew that it could be your last possession. And that's, again, I just, when I knew you were going to be on the show, I just took myself back to all the days. And every time I saw you compete in the league, and guys don't get that anymore, man. They don't compete, like, just from listening to you, because I'm learning more about you now through this podcast, just listening to you talk about your goals and what you stood for to leave East Orange and go all the way across the country to Stanford, and then have one mission, and then change that to another mission while doing the other one. And then you're like, okay, my parents instill all this other stuff in me. It's like everything that you're about, it all came into play and pushed you to be great in every area of your life, academically, trying to make the lead, working out, going to summer school to get ahead. And man, just explain that to guys, man. I mean, just to be, you say undersized, but you play bigger than what you were. But guys out there going, man, am I too small? Or, you know, what do I have to do? Just can you just explain that part?
Well, this is what I say for all guards. The thing I say is, can you play the game? Like, too much will you focus on what you can't do, mm-hmm. but what not enough focus on what you can do. Mm-hmm. And so if you just continue to elevate yourself in terms of worrying about, okay, this is what I know I can do to help a team win. And what it did for me, and I tell guys, this still matters, is do your teams win? Mm-hmm. Like, the reason why I started to start at Stanford, why even they – I tell people, when I went to Stanford, Coach Montgomery didn't even know who I was. Like, they literally started to recruit me because they needed to change the tempo at which they played because all of the guards were too fast for the guards that were at Stanford. Mm-hmm. So it was like, well, we need to be quicker. They a guy didn't – his game got canceled that they were recruiting in Jersey. The coach came up to where we were playing, saw me play, and was like, oh, shucks, what's his grades? My grades were always good. That's how they started to recruit me. I got to school. Mike Montgomery was just like, well, listen, I got one scholarship. Whichever one of y'all say yes first, that's what I'm going to give it to. I went to the office next door, called my mom, and she was like, man, you'd be crazy to not take it. You're not coming back home without it. And so we did that. And all it is, I say all that has to say is if there's a belief in you and you make your teams win, like, that whole size thing goes out the window.
It does.
Because there are going to be other people on the team that do other things in their way and to help you win. But what you do, like, it was every game we played, no matter how we mixed up the teams, my teams won. And so that mentality of, I'm not going to let it be the negative for me. I'm going to let it be the positive. And then I think that changes your mindset. The other thing is, you're not going to change that you're 5'10", or that you're 6 feet. It's not gonna happen. And you're not gonna change the mind so much of someone who is dead set on, just because somebody is taller, that's better. You can't worry about those people. You can only worry about what's in your control. And I tell that to all small guards, is don't try to be what you're not, number one, and figure out a way, how do I help my teams win? Because if you're in winning situations, people want you around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So after the years at Stanford, you're blessed enough to know that you're going to be going in the draft. 16th pick. Come on, bro. 16th pick in the draft. You're supposed to be undersized. Come on, bro. That's not usual. That's unusual.
Hey, hold on, Penny. I was mad as hell, too, though.
You said, I'm higher.
Hell yeah.
That's about right with you.
I said, look, Chauncey Billups went before me. I said, okay, I see. But then it was, and then I came, now he's become to be a good friend of mine, Antonio Daniels.
Yep,
when Antonio Daniels yep. went six, I said, bro, I don't even know who he is. Like, Bowling Green, like, what did Bowling Green do? But this is what it was. He was 6'4", 6'3", he was longer arms, he's more athletic. So it's like, I can't control that. And so, I was extremely happy to go to Cleveland. But just so you know, I was happy because I had that chance, but I was like, bro, I should have been higher.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Rightfully so. Rightfully so. And as a, we keep saying this undersized guard, just as a shorter guard, I'm not even saying undersized, because everybody's not 6'7",
exactly.
6'4", and all that. How did you work your game knowing that it was going to be taller guys guarding you at that PG position? And like, did you think about, my workouts is going to be about tempo? My workouts is going to be about just outworking them. What were your workouts like, and how did that work for you, especially going into your rookie season?
So if you know Cedric Henderson, if he was around, he would be like, bro, you better not lie. You better tell the truth. Because in the beginning, I'll be honest with you, I never worked out.
Oh.
Like, I never, and I kick myself now. It's like, I played the 12 years and probably could have played and should have played more because I was physically healthy enough to do it. I was just mentally done playing basketball. But I never changed my game or worked on my game to get better at shooting the ball better. Mm. Even in the summer, like, we would, when I was here in Memphis, we'd go over everybody would lift, get shots up first over at Dean Lotz.
Yep.
Over at Dean Lotz. And then we would go, and then we'd play. We play 3-4 times a week. Sam would be like, bro, we're going to go work out. And then we playing tonight. And I'd be like, well, what time are we playing? he would say the time. And I was like, well, I mean, he's like, bro, why don't you come work out? I was like, because that's during golf time, yo. Like, dude, I got to get this golfing in the morning.
Right.
And so I hate that I never, my working out was playing basketball. Like, it was no different when I was little. Like, I don't know. I never had a trainer. Like, I never had a workout regimen that included going and working on doing this. It would literally just be, I would play five. When I was younger, it was play every day. When I got to the league, it was, I lived here because we played so much that I played all the time. And maybe it would be like those once a week, or every now and then, right before the season, it's like, all right, let's go get some shots somewhere. And then we go play the season. And it was literally, I tell people, I don't say that as to say that's something that you should try, because well, look, you still play 12, yeah, but I limited myself so much in my career of what I could have done, because I thought that, well, I'm still getting these years in the league and I'm still here. I got complacent when I got there, and I hate that I did that.
Yeah, it's always something that you can look back on and go, man, if I would have done anything differently. Now, did that change your mentality with your son?
It did, very much so.
Okay.
And almost to a detriment.
Mm.
You know, I say this to all dads, especially us, that we have sons. You want to help your son, but you also still want your son to enjoy doing it.
Yep.
And not always should you try to – it's almost like the mistakes or things that you did, you trying to make them – not have those same mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in some ways, it almost puts them at a negative, and so it can hurt your relationship. And I had to figure it out real quick that, oh, bro, we going the wrong way with what you think you're doing in terms of helping. I think it's more so hurting.
Right.
And so yeah, it was. I think it was. I was. It was almost too much. Until when I had to learn, like, well, you got to back off and let it be the type of career in basketball that he wants to play.
Right, and all of us have that deal, because I was a guy that worked out by myself a lot because I did get in the gym, and then obviously I have my sons that play for me.
Yes.
And you can be so tough that it's not enjoyable for either one of you guys, because you want them just to succeed.
Yes.
And they're so young, they're not really seeing it. They're like, man, this is dad, and I got him for basketball, then I got to talk to him about life. It's different and difficult.
I commend you on being able to do it to the college level.
Woo.
I did it for AAU for 4 years. And when they got, I knew when they were in the seventh grade, and I told them for the next year, I was like, after this next year, y'all, everybody's going to have to figure out where they're going to play. They was like, why Coach Knight? And I was like, this is, like, inside, I knew it was not going to be good for my son and I to keep being in that type of environment.
Right.
Like, and he needed to hear someone else's voice. He needed to see basketball in another way. And so for you to continue it and have it at that level, and for y'all to still be able to be cool, bro, it's
different,
big time.
Bro. I promise it's different. So I'm gonna go backwards a little bit, because we talked about the offensive side, you're not working. Your defense, you're probably one of the best on-ball defenders. You moved. And I remember playing against you, and I knew your game defensively because you were really smart, and you bait people into stuff. Like, is that just a competitive nature in you, or did you have a game plan against every guy, like taller guys versus shorter guys?
So what it was, like, all of that going to school and all of that doing all that stuff was like, man, I got to use it for something. I didn't sit up in this room and do all this studying and all this stuff to get good grades for it to not be used in some way. And so even though I was still in basketball, I was like, well, use it in basketball. And the biggest thing I always tell people was angles are very important. But the other thing is just the science of the dribble. Like, to be able to dribble, the ball has to go down and come back up.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to go down and come back. I think I told you this.
Yep.
For me, what I watch is once you put this ball down, it's very hard for you to put it down again.
Right.
Very hard for you to do that.
Yep.
So now when this next dribble, I get the kick. I never try to take the ball from you early in the game. I just want you to feel comfortable.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to be there. I'm not going to let you beat me. But I'm just watching. I'm watching the moves you like to make. I want to see, are you a big dribbler? Are you a pound-the-ball dribbler? So now I know once this happens, now I can go for a steal, because there's no way in the world you able to now go get it again before I can.
Yep.
And so I think – with my size, it was, yes, I watched some film on what guys did, but I never wanted to get so bogged down by these tendencies and this is what he's going to do, that I didn't just play in the flow of the game. Because I don't know tonight. Sure, tonight he could be feeling something totally different tonight. But I'm so locked in on this what he does that I'm waiting for what he does, but I'm not just watching him play and move as he's playing.
Yeah.
Big guys in the post, was I just always waited for bigs in the post. Just as soon as you put it down and you turn, then I'm coming to get you.
I remember that.
And still to this day, my wife and my kids say that, like, when I start messing around, they're like, look, bro, you don't know how hard your hands are. And it's like, when I, it's almost like I got, like somebody that's been really working outside, working hard hands. And,
yeah.
And I think a lot, I attribute that to playing in the cold. Like, so we, in the wintertime, we still play basketball outside.
Oh, no doubt.
We shovel off the court if there's snow on it, and we were still playing. So I say that these hard hands really helped, though, in basketball, being able to rip the ball away.
Mm-hmm.
I used it to, and then my other attribute was I felt like I was always faster than everybody else on the floor. And I used being fast. You asked me how do I, on the other end, on offense, I was different in that I didn't take a lot of moves to beat you. Like, I just know that I'm faster than you and I can get to there. I just need to make a move to get me to right there.
Yeah, once you got your gap, you just
then
burst
I'm going.
It.
But again, what I say is the angle. I need to just get this shoulder even with your shoulder, and now I got you beat.
Yep.
There's no way in the world that I can be even with you going running downhill and you having the back truck that you're going to be able to be as fast as I am.
Yeah,
not going to happen.
No, not happening.
It's time for a 2 cents timeout to talk about Pick Six from DraftKings. We've been telling you all about Pick Six throughout the NBA season and through the NBA Cup. And now there is no better time to get on DraftKings Pick Six because it's the postseason in the NFL. That's right, we're talking football too. Have you played Pick Six yet from DraftKings? Well, now is the best time to get into it. The playoffs are here and time is running out. As the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL, DraftKings does fantasy sports like no one else. Play for better payouts on Pick 6. It's super easy to get started. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app, select two or more players, and choose if they'll have more or less of a stat, like a quarterback that will throw for two touchdowns, or which running back will rush for less than 100 yards, or which linebacker will have more than one sack. It's just that easy. Pick 6 is available in most states, including Missouri, California, Texas, Georgia, and more. And DraftKings is making it even sweeter for first-timers. New Pick 6 customers play $5 and get $50 in Pick 6 credits. So, for fans of the 2 cents, we have something special for you. Win more cash on Pick 6. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and use code PENNY. That's code PENNY for new customers to play $5 and get $50 in Pick 6 credits. Only on DraftKings Pick 6, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 and over. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 credits that expire in 30 days. Limited time offer. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Now, did you have any idols growing up, like guys that you saw that was like, man, I really like his game? And
Magic? Magic Johnson.
Wow. Because of the charisma, because of the playmaking, because of the love? What was it?
Because of the way that he ran his teams. Like, people get enamored with how he did it, but if you break it down, it was still all basic basketball.
No doubt about
like, it. Like, it was may have been this look away. But this look away, them pass hit everybody right here. If it was a bounce pass, it bounced right here. Like, if somebody's coming off a down screen, he throws it to them right where they need it to either catch and shoot or lead you to keep going on the curl. And he won. Like, it was he won. So between he, and then I would flip, and then I love Isaiah Thomas. You want to talk about competitor? You feel me? Like, you wasn't going to find a shorter guard who was just going – he was going to compete until the end of time. Like, people talk about the tough guys, Rick Mahorn and Bill Laimbeer. But to me, it was, there was nobody tougher than Isaiah Thomas on that basketball team.
Hands down.
And what he was, the other two were enforcers. Yeah. Like when something need to happen, we gonna make it happen.
Yeah.
But so I think those, and then another guy that I love watching was Mark Price.
Mark Price was very savvy, very smooth, could shoot it.
And was the best splitter of, so you know, when we played, we did a lot of hard show.
Yep.
In our day for basketball, we played screen. Like, bigs had to for real work. They don't, not today's bigs.
Switch.
Damn, just stand back there. Screen. Damn, they're going to help me, right? Keep letting this guard just come over. And the people are like, you got to guard him, bros. He's setting a screen, and this guy never stops. It's impossible for me to get back in front. And so, don't get me started on that.
I know,
so
right?
In our day, we had a lot of show, like a lot of hedge, or we had a lot of traps with bigs. And so Mark Price was the best at splitting that and that one leg little runner. And I love, whenever I say that, people are like, Mark Price, what you mean? I was like, bro, go back and watch how he played the game, man. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
so
it
I
was.
Think those are the three people that I enjoy in terms of pros that I enjoy watching.
Yeah, no, that's the same for me. Have respect for, and Magic was my favorite player, obviously, but all those other guys, the other guys he's named, Mark Price, that's a name a lot of people, younger guys wouldn't know, but they need to look him up and see how he played the game. And he could shoot it.
Yes.
He could shoot it.
With range.
Sure. Yep. So they're talking about guards from the Northeast. Were you aware, I'm sure you were, Rafe Austin, Stephon Marbury, Ken Anderson, all those guys, even Shamgar. Did you look up to any of those guys just from the, I know you were from East Orange and they were from the city. Like, were you really into like watching them, or you just, I heard of them and then I know who they are?
I heard them and know who you are. So that is like a rival thing for us, for New York guards, New Jersey guards. And so you can respect the talent that they have, and they played the game a lot differently than we played the game. And so like the way that we played it, there was a little bit more jump shooting involved, a little bit more, not as much fanciness to the game of how they played it. And they were more get downhill, get in the paint, make it happen all the time.
Yeah.
And that was fine. It was enjoyable to watch. All of those guys, of course, the Kenny Anderson, I loved the Kenny Anderson, Bob Hurley matchups, like everybody did when Georgia Tech played against Duke.
Oh, man.
I turned the TV on to watch those. And then the other guys are a little bit younger. So Shamgar played against him and doing that. And then Stephon was just, I mean, he was, people only know the ending of how of all of the stuff that happened towards the end. But if you go back and watch the type of player that he was, he was amazing. From a kid, like, he was one of those people that you knew, bro. I don't like. He's a little bit. He had the New York players had, but he scored the ball differently.
Yeah,
like, shot it from deep.
Yeah,
super athletic. He was a little bit different than the other ones. But Kenny Anderson was. I mean, he was. He was one of those just silent killers. He just went at your neck with that left hand.
Yeah, he got it done. And I played with Steph, and I worked out with Kenny in Miami. Both of those are good guys, legends in the game. Definitely respect both of their games. Now let's go on to your profession now. How long have you been with the Memphis Grizzlies?
I've been on – this is my 16th year on the TV.
Wow. And you got a front row seat to 16 years of Grizzlies basketball. Just talk about that if you can, please.
Well, the cool part about it is, I mean, I was here from day one in terms of a player. So, and seeing the team's inception and seeing how far behind, you know, I still call it Memphis State, how far behind Memphis State we were in terms of the people here in Memphis.
Right.
Like people see it today. I think we've gotten to where we've gotten close.
Right.
But every damn year y'all keep getting good. Shit, we drop back down again.
Right.
Like we understand where we are in this community.
Right.
In terms of the university.
It's not personal though, B. It's just longevity.
That's that's what I've come to know. The thing is, like, and it's, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, shoot, I always tell people there's a different love when you enjoy an NBA team and the love for your school. Like, that's just it is that's there's no touching the what those two things are. And so so to see it now, and I only say that to say, to see it go from being there to now seeing people wearing Grizzlies t-shirts, wearing Grizzlies gear, like not just in the arena, but around the city. It's been enjoyable for me to see it go from day one to where we are today, to see the players that have come through the core four, to see us go from not being able to win a playoff series and then to beat San Antonio, make it to the Western Conference Finals. And then you get, now we move on to this second generation all of a sudden of kind of the success for this franchise and watching Jaren and Ja grow. And so I just feel blessed that I've been able to see it from day one. I've been able to see the highs. Shucks, I've seen the lows. But it's just been fun to see how this the team and the organization has become as much of a fabric of the city and getting as close as the university has done for so many years.
Yeah, I you know, been watching this team. Obviously, you have a courtside seat every game. And I say when we're healthy, and I say we because I'm a part of this whole thing being from Memphis and all of that, we can beat anybody, bro. Like, so what are you seeing over on the sideline that the rest of the league just doesn't know? Because when I see those guys healthy, I'm like, man, we can everybody healthy, we can beat anybody in any playoff series.
I can tell you this, man. Every night that I hear Charles Barkley say the Grizzlies, they're the wild card in the Western Conference, I'm like, nah, be quiet. Y'all just keep not talking about it. You know what I'm saying? Like that was the same way when they became the second team in the West for those back-to-back seasons, there was nobody talked about them. It was just this young upstart team that's down there in the South. You know, they got this star that, you know, he creates these plays, and it's like, all right, just keep us on the back burner. But my thoughts were that this was a championship-contending team now. And I said it, like, all of the moves, all of the thoughts should be in terms of winning right now. Mm-hmm. And because you have your superstar in Ja Morant, but then you had two guys who were stars in this league. And Jaren, I thought it was always, bro, if you just realize how good you are. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't work on this or work. It was just, do you realize more than just being the role, like I played a role next to this guy. Like, you can be a star in and of yourself in this game. And I think last season, the silver lining was he realized, like, oh, I can also, you can put this on me and I can sort of be able to, the guy that has to make the plays every night to give us a chance to win. And I think that belief has just translated into this year. And I thought if we got him to be able to be at this level, then that even more so put them in the position of being able to win a championship. And they needed to find a big center. Now, I know Edie's out with the sprained ankle, but I think that he's a big enough presence, and we've seen enough that he can give them that size on the interior that they're going to need as you get later into the playoffs. Brandon Clark has been – we started to see Brandon Clark of old again. But you're going to need Edie's size, his brawn, and his strength as the season goes along.
Yeah, talk about D-Bane and Marcus Smart, because those guys have to guard. They have to – obviously, Marcus Smart has to make plays. He has to be the leader. D-Bane, we need him to score. Those two guys, along with Jaren and Ja, come on now. And the size, like you said, that's a pretty good unit right there.
Well, the thing that we saw from Dez the little bit last year and the year before was that the scoring ability was going to be there, but also that he could make some plays also if you needed him to. And so to just see, he came back from the oblique injury. He hadn't fully found the shooting touch that we're accustomed to seeing, but we've seen the efficiency on low field goal attempts. Like, he hadn't, the last couple of games, hadn't taken a lot of shots, but had been very efficient at doing it. And so with I always say the mark of a good player is kind of knowing where you are in the moment. And in a moment, he's like, well, I'm not making a lot of shots, so I don't have to take a lot of shots, but I still affect the game with rebounds and assists playing defense. And when they need big shots, I can make big shots for the team. And so he's been terrific. And then I thought for Marcus, we've seen the highest level of professionalism from him, because for his first time to take the role of being a guy coming off the bench, and to accept the role and flourish in the role, has been big. And it's a great example for young players in our game to say, like, a guy of his caliber has been in the league for 9 years, that's been on winning teams, that's been in multiple playoff scenarios and has started the entire time, now is being asked to come off the bench for a rookie, in essence. And for him to be able to do that but still go out and play, I think it just speaks volumes of how good of a communicator Taylor is, and his staff is, to be able to get that across and what his influence will be. But it's also just a credit then to him and then the rest of the team to just step in, kind of support him in this new role. And so, we can go down the line. Santi Aldama has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. And Jake LaRavia just picking up where he was from last year. Mm-hmm. Jalen Wells, who's now in the starting lineup, who's another one of these second-round picks. And I always said, just something about guys who played in college, mm-hmm, for 4 years,
yep,
that now are ready to play. It happened with Desmond. It now happens with Jalen Wells. Jake LaRavia, similar situation. And so it's just been nice to see all of Scottie Pippen Jr. has played well. And I think it's this team's depth that has you in the mindset that, shoot, as long as you got to keep your star guys healthy, though. I mean, you can be as good, you know this, Penn, you can be as good as you want to be on the back end and everybody playing well together, but you still need your star players to be healthy. So those moments that's, mm-hmm, late in the game, those are the guys that bring it home for you.
Yeah, so in a playoff scenario, is it more we need Ja to be on his A game, or do we need the rest of the group to be on their A game? Because Ja's going to do what he's going to do.
We need the rest of the group to be on their A game. I mean, here's the thing. I promise you, there wasn't one coach that worried about where Penny's going to be where it's time to play this game. Like, right. I need to make sure that the rest of these guys, mindset is ready. You understand what your role is, what the task is, what we like. That's, and if I can get those guys to be good supporting wise, all right, then we're going to be fine. Yeah. You do the reason why you're a superstar, and the reason why you're that is because you've ascended to that level. I ain't worried about you. All right, we may go over what you think the best way to put you in a position to be successful. That's all I want to do. But outside of that, I wash my hands of that. The rest of these dudes, though, hey, we in on this. All right, now let's go.
Yeah, I think when you talk about, I was talking to Dame Lillard one time about how to play the Nuggets. And I was like, well, why don't y'all just double-team Jokic and get the ball out of his hands? He was like, well, man, he's so good at diamond. You got to kind of pick your poise. You might as well let him get 50.
Yes.
But then you got to hold down Michael Porter. You got to hold down all these other guys.
Yes.
Jamal Murray. So that's why they got to elevate and go to the next level the same way the Grizzlies have to.
Well, you look at how many – Jokic just had another 50-point game and they lost. And so it is, and that was against the Wizards. The Wizards beat them. Jokic, I think, had 56. But you keep everybody else at bay. Don't let, mm-hmm, because the thing about it is he can get 40, but he also can get 12 assists. You're really not going to stop the rebounds because defensively you're going to get rebounds. Mm-hmm. But in terms of making everyone else better, I don't want someone else to feel comfortable about having to make a shot. I want it to be – now maybe we get into the last 2-3 minutes of the game. Now maybe I want to run a double team at him.
Yeah.
And now I want to make Brown. I want to make Brown. You got to make the shot to win it. Or Aaron Gordon, you got to make a shot to win it. Or you see what I'm saying? Now, now it changes late in the game. But throughout the body of the game, I don't want you letting everybody feel good about getting their shots and playing. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to do that.
Yeah, no, that's the rhythm that you don't want them to have for sure. The other thing about Ja's game that really impressed me watching him from a rookie on up is his playmaking ability. Ja got dimes. That's something that he's not known for because he's so athletic. That dude has vision. Talk about that, because you're a guy that had vision.
Yeah, what I like about him is, and sometimes I'm always like, I'll just make that pass right there. But it's like, oh, he didn't want to make that one. But eventually he made it. I was like, oh, okay, I didn't I didn't see it happening in that fashion.
Right.
But damn, he got it done. And so I think we try to talk about it as much as we can in terms of his IQ, because I think his IQ is what allows him to make the next plays. The reason why he can make a acrobatic play in the air is still because he was ready to make a play. He saw it before it happens. Like, so as I'm going to mm-hmm. make this move, it's like, oh, they're going to take this way so I can make this move. And so the ability to see plays before they happen is something that not everyone has. And just the knowledge to know what the other team's defensive schemes are, what they're trying to do to stop him, is something that he excels at also. And so, the highlight plays are fantastic. Like we love to see those plays, but there's so much more to his game. Like I tell people, when he starts getting downhill, like you know this, Penny, more times than not, when you make a side-to-side move, there's some type of side-to-side action. Mm-hmm. Like if I cross over, I'm still crossing over and I'm going side. It's still be down, but it's still side. Mm-hmm. If I'm between the legs, it's side. Behind the back, it's still to the side. Mm-hmm. But for him, I tell people, it's like he's between the legs, but still it's to the side, but it's forward. It is. I cross you, but when I cross you, it's not that I beat you fast this way. I still beat you fast right here. Forward. Yep. Uh-huh. I think he has a knack for being able to get where he wants to on the floor. And he's just the belief that other guys can help. I don't have to do it all. Then that lends itself to making the right plays to other people.
Yeah, man, that's all beautiful stuff, man. And again, you know, this last segment is me just giving you your flowers, man. A lot of people don't mention your name enough as one of the best guards to play in the league. You fought your way around. Every guard that you competed against, guaranteed, would salute you on how you approach the game. And for your whole entire career, from Stanford to in the NBA, to your professionalism as a player and a locker room leader and how you played the game, and now, you know, obviously being married and being a father and a great family man and being on the radio and TV here now, just appreciate you, brother. I wanted to give you your flowers and appreciate everything that you did for the game and that you continue to do for the game.
Man, listen, I thank you. You know, there are very few people that I cut golf rounds short for. I already told you, I chose golf over working out in my own profession.
Right.
And so to have a chance to sit and talk with you. And as I told you before, I said I thank you. I thank Elliot Perry,
mm-hmm.
Cedric Henderson, because without the three of y'all saying that, yo, he's cool, I don't know if I'm able to move in the way that I have here in the city. And so you know that I'm always going to be rooting for you.
And I appreciate it.
And what you've been able to accomplish. As you said, whenever we talk about the university, we say we. When we're on the road and we're going to watch the game and we need them to turn it on, they're like, well, turn on the Memphis game. We need to watch, see what we're about to do.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And so, y'all, you know that love and respect goes both ways, man. From my days of watching you play, I think your effect now is so much greater than what it was then. And so you just keep moving the way you're moving, man. Yeah. There's always going to be naysayers. There's always going to be people that think they know that ain't in the know.
Yeah,
bro, you just keep moving and doing how you do.
Yeah, no doubt, man. God got both of us, bro, and he's always had both of us. Again,
yes,
ladies
sir.
And gentlemen, Brevin Knight. Brevin, thank you so much, bro. Thank you guys for tuning in to My Two Cents Podcast. See you next time. Peace.